So because now I want to invite comments and questions from the floor.
Thank you for an interesting presentation and an interesting discussion. My name is Karin Metel-Cueva. I'm head of SIDA's Capacity Development Unit and partly responsible also for the international training programs. So I learned a lot about animal health here that I didn't know. But I have a question. I think it was an interesting picture about the systems approach, the complex system that animal health is within. And also, I think it was Ola who pointed out that governments who are working on this, they don't want to work on a problem that's 30 years from now. They want to solve problems now. So can you give an example of what are the urgent problems that you could focus on or that we could focus on to be solved? Because also when I look at your recommendations and what you are recommending, it's more research and more data, and that's obviously needed. It's more capacity, and capacity is always thrown in as something that we have to do. It can be so many things and so many ways of building capacity. So research and training and even master's education or whatever. So what type of capacity is it that we are looking for? Is it everything or is it something in particular? And then thirdly, I'd also be interested because several of you mentioned the public-private partnerships that have been promising. So how can we work or what are the promising positive deviants, you could say, on public-private partnerships that has worked? Thank you.
The low-hanging fruits, what's the most important, what's urgent, and then the private part.
I think the natural tendency is to go for another big disease. So the current priorities at international level will be peste petite ruminante, which is a disease similar to rinderpest in sheep and goats, or rabies. I'm trying to think of the third one.
Anthrax.
Is it anthrax? But I just draw a caution under that. It's all very well putting all our money into that basket, but we tend to end up just training people to vaccinate animals and not necessarily to actually understand animal disease as such. So I think it needs to be combined with a more nuanced approach of maybe looking at a big disease problem as well as actually managing better the general animal health spectrum. And I suppose the other area that is on the international agenda is how do we manage antimicrobial use in the livestock system? At the moment, that's not particularly well done in many places, including Europe. So how are we capturing data? How are we actually understanding where risks lie with regards to resistance? And how are we actually doing things better in that space? So I think, for me, would be one or two of the big diseases plus antimicrobial use and management of resistance issues would be the sort of initial starting points.
Okay, so.
Yeah. Okay. I think another sort of low-hanging fruit, and I mentioned it a couple of times, but that's maybe because I'm so passionate about it, it is access to animal health services, and that could be for men and women, but really, I think, and that's also something Sweden has been involved in through strengthening extension systems, but that's really where I see where we can have a very quick improvement and an immediate effect that also farmers recognise very quickly. And it can be done in conjunction with international eradication programmes because they also rely on these services being provided. So, and it actually is linked to capacity development that is really required. And it, there's no one-fits-all solution for every country, because in some countries, community animal health workers, for example, are the way forward. In other countries, it is strengthening of the official vet system. And yet in other countries, you can take an even more privatized approach with private veterinary practices, with their assistance. So I think there's different solutions that are there that need to be evaluated and being implemented. But strengthening access to necessary products, to necessary services, actually to get the knowledge to farmers, I think is a fairly straightforward way to have a quick impact.
Good. Madam Chair?
We need a napkin.
Okay. Yeah, about capacity building. This is in very close to my heart because I believe in humans. And I think that will be sustainable efforts if you invest in people's capacity. And I see at least two tracks. One is the long-term academic cooperation, bilaterals that CEDA very successfully promoting for a long, long time. And then it's also training of professionals, either these shorter or these, what do you call it, ITP courses, but also maybe other courses, training of professionals into new concepts on target areas. For instance, use of antimicrobials, for instance, biosecurity and things like that, food safety perhaps, very target tailored things. I think and targeting the right professionals, and not only this ordinary workshop thing, and too many workshops around, but targeted in good courses. I think that is low hanging fruit with a strong leverage. If that answers your question.
Other interventions? Yes, please. I'll state your name.
I am Maria Teresa Bellerano. I work at the research unit, and I coordinate support to health research. When listening to what has been said here and knowing that we have to approach everything with one health vision, and we support in health what we call the health strengthening, health system strengthening. And maybe one could talk about health system strengthening, talking also about the animal health side. But the problem that I see is that when we talk about health system strengthening in the human side, we know more or less there is a diagnostic of how many doctors and community health workers and nurses are required, or the minimal requirement for number of people. Do we have the same kind of information about the minimal requirement for animals, so that we could maybe have an approach that is more a one health approach and strengthen the health systems and also strengthening the agricultural health system or the animal health system?
Good question. Right into the first recommendation, I think, from the report.
No, we don't. And I think that reflects the fact that livestock have different values in different places. But also with the human health side, what you're describing is the public sector actually paying for those doctors or those nurses, largely. It's not paid for by the patients themselves. I'm correct in saying that. So you're identifying a need, and you're taking a very much sort of management science, and we have to solve that problem because that's good for society. Whereas a lot of roles that vets play or animal health workers play is very different from that context. We've drawn back from actually funding animal health systems quite strongly in the 80s and 90s. And a lot of that's private sector delivery, where the demand for those services is not quite the same thing. There have been recent studies done in the US around the demand and supply of vets into the US system, but I'm not familiar that a similar type of piece of work has been done in lower and middle-income countries. I don't know, Barbara, do you know anything that's been done recently?
No.
So there is a bit of a gap in terms of understanding where that fits. But the market is very different from human health.
Mm-hmm. And I think previous organisations have been dissolved and a lot has been left to new initiatives and so on. Some might work
with
well,
the assumption
others...
that private sector delivery is... Private sector delivery is better, but no evidence that actually that is.
We recognise the discussion within health sector in Sweden that it becomes sort of disjoint. I think I had another question there.
Thank you. My name is Katarina Eriksson. I represent the private sector. Tetra Laval, Food for Development, together here with my colleague Morgan. So it's been mentioned a lot, but an example of private sector involvement. We work with our colleagues in Tetra Pak and De Laval to develop value chains, milk primarily, we do a project with SIDA right now in Bangladesh, working with smallholder farmers, smallholder dairy farmers. And I was thinking of what Barbara said about the lack of vets and a lack of services, but it's also a lack of quality services. And I don't know how big this problem is in other places, but we've heard from the farmers in Bangladesh how they, when they're on their own, they are very exposed to sub-quality services and products. And this, in our case, has been solved through the collaboration with our customer, the dairy company, who provides the services and the products that their suppliers need. And with that, they build up the loyalty and commit to buy all their milk. And through these, we call it the dairy hub model, they get access to buying the feed, the products, the inputs they need, but also veterinary services. And the government system hasn't really lived up to its standards. They might, for example, sell vaccines by splitting them into half. So farmers pay, but they don't get what they pay for, and they don't trust the system. So I don't know why am I saying this?
Because it's important.
So one shouldn't underestimate the role of the private sector. In this case, it's not by private vets necessarily, but also with the companies that buys the products from the farmers. They have a role to play, and it must be the same for many. It could be the same for many other value chains. So while governments are not providing the services they should, it's not about that the food vets that they're not trained, but they are probably not paid enough. So they make some extra money by fiddling with the system. So it's also about making sure that the systems, you mentioned management and how these organizations function. It's about paying staff well it's not just about the numbers. And of course, I think this is a very good way that SIDA and other development agencies can support the development through the private sector. I mean, we all have the same goal. It's animal health and it's poverty reduction. And we can do this through different pathways. And this is one. And I just hope that we can do more of this type of collaboration, private-public partnerships with companies like ours that can also play a role in improving the situation.
Thank you. I think this is a very important aspect that we intended to have more of in this panel. Also, the trade issues, the way actually that taking things to the market can be a trigger for improvement. Create demand for veterinary services and for improved services, and it's happening, but too slowly probably. Any comment on this?
I would very much agree that the private sector can have a very important pull effect on the whole sector, and we've been playing with ideas and project ideas to develop outgrower models that sort of goes in the direction that you mentioned, that you have contractual agreements with livestock producers, with slaughterhouses and so on. And that seems an idea to really bring in the private sector very efficiently. But then there is, as you mentioned, some of the risks that still remain would then be whether the official veterinary service can fulfill their role, their oversight role, the quality control that comes in, because so there needs to be a coordinated way in this change of roles of public veterinary services together with the private veterinary service. But I think it's, and when you also have examples that show that it can work and that it can be done, then sure, there's lots of opportunities for the private sector to be more involved.
Yeah, I have a hand there. Yeah.
My name is Susanna Sternberg-Leverin. I work in the Swedish University of Agriculture Sciences, and sciences, that's where I come from. I've heard you saying a lot about measurements and data and so on. It sounds to me like room for science. So it's been mentioned also that we've been eradicating single animal diseases and we've done a lot of technical improvements and so on. But implementation is lacking, the implementation of knowledge, and there's a lot of things that it seems to me like there is room for more collaboration between natural sciences and social sciences. And I think we're moving towards that within the science, among scientists. But I think are the funders and the scientific community really following here? Are we into that enough? Is there room for these type of... Because it's much harder to collaborate with scientists from very different fields, but I think that's necessary if we want to get the implementation stage as well. I mean, we've done the... It's not necessarily low-hanging fruits, but still the technical science has been done a lot. There's been a lot of achievements there, but we need to move towards the implementation phase, and we can't just say that now social science can take over. We need to collaborate, and it's a sort of scientific funding agencies ready for that.
We will discuss that in another seminar on research policy. have a comment.
I think there's several experiences from Barbara and Jonas and all of us. I think we fully share your view that we should balance more into social science, into implementing. Why don't things work when we natural scientists or veterinarians find out fantastic vaccines or diagnostic things? Why are they not used? Why don't this change happen? And I know that the scientific society in these international circles are moving much more into that field and taking that into account. It's a great awareness about that, I think.
The role of the humanities, I think, is a key thing in Sverker Sörlin's coming report, and David Nilsson's coming report on research policy for development. Yeah.
Just a detail. A colleague of ours had recently attended the kickoff of the updating of the antimicrobial plan at the European Union level. And one, which I feel was very significant and discussion point, was that there was agreement to include behavioural sciences. Mm-hmm. Because you can see in countries that we think they have unacceptable high levels of using antibiotics for things which it don't think it should be used for. These countries show regional differences. And why do they do that?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. I would like to thank everyone for very interesting hours on animal health. My name is Madeleine Fogde, and I am heading the Swedish International Agriculture Network Initiative. So we are really a PAGU approach. We work across the sectors, and last year we actually did contribute also to sharing knowledge from the Swedish resource base, the Swedish farmers and veterinary services around AMR and other urban animal issues. So I can recommend our website. And I think when you said that there might not be the best manager, they don't really have the time to communicate. Sometimes it's also good to link up with some kind of communication platforms to get messages out and get the messages out so that normal people understand it. Because when you come from health and veterinary, you might be very specific. So sometimes it's good to have this kind of collaboration. My question, however, is that I originally have a very long background in the water and sanitation sector. And there we look much more to prevent than the curative part of health. So when there are, this is for my curiosity, but I think this is really very important. We have these big cities and situations where there is no sanitation, and if there is a system in place, this is not treated, everything goes out into the environment and affects people indirectly. So in the One Health approach, how much is water and sanitation included? And the other question is also how much, and I think it's not so much, is the risk of zoonosis and decontamination also addressed in the bigger water community? Because I think this is to link up to one more sector to make the issue a little bit more complicated, but I think it's a very important sector. As I know, there are safe sanitation plans for cities, but are they also addressing the animal health and protection of the animal health, for example? There are many in the cities. So this. I don't know if it was a question.
Thank you. Important question. Who would?
Well, I think we can only agree. Water is the vehicle for transmission of a number of diseases, both to animals and man, and between animals and man. So, of course, it's extremely important. And good water also for feeding the animals, for feeding cows that has to produce milk every day. They need a lot of good water, just as human beings need. So good and healthy water is extremely important.
Yes, please.
And also the inconvenient truth is that the animal sector within cities in low-income countries are, as we call, very informal. It's an informal sector, not regulated, and it's a very, as Jonathan said, it's a very dynamic process. So authorities don't catch up. There's rarely any extension services working in cities for animals because animals are not supposed to be in cities. So it's indeed an issue.
Just add as well that I think in the regard that you've just mentioned, there's a lot of awareness of localized pollution from the livestock units we have. I think that attention will be intensified as we go into the antimicrobial use and antimicrobial resistance debates. So there's a lot of evidence that these units actually affect the environment in which they're part of, and they do that through the water systems that we have in place. Not just our livestock production units, but our slaughter units, our placing of these things, our management of the environment is absolutely critical.
Yes, one more question, or one more comment there's time for. Have everything been said and done? It seems so. You have had answers to all of your to your questions and made the comments you wanted to make. Then I think we should give you the chance to have a final word. We start with the commentators and then the authors. If you want to conclude something, what about policy conclusions from this?
I'm just stopped.
Right. I think I've learned a lot here today. I think we've heard a lot of interesting things here today. What I take with me from this presentation, I think, is this what was mentioned in the report, that we lack, basically we lack knowledge. We need more to understand the situation in especially urban rural areas, but of course, as Ulf said here just now, also from a urban perspective. At the same time, I think another thing I take with me from here is that based on Agenda 2030, I think we need to think a bit differently also, not in the old traditional sectors, but rather to look at, to think in different ways, taking a bit more holistic perspective, looking at water, looking at health, looking at migration and so on. And because these are the things that today affects us most. We can't solve the problems of yesterday with that kind of thinking, you know, this old quote. And I think I take that with me. This is bigger than only a small narrow sector dealing only with the technical aspects of animal health.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, I'd like to thank the writers and EBA again for taking up this very important topic. And the report will further reinforce the efforts that we make at the ministry, because I see that as a sign that we're going in the right direction, and not least from what you pointed out, how important animal health is for all other sectors, not just for the health aspect, but we recently had the National Security Strategy, who identified 8 areas, and one of them was health, with pandemics and zoonosis and antimicrobial resistance. So we really need to adapt ourselves to a thinking that will suit the implementation of Agenda 2030.
And share experience with others.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, also from my side, I really enjoyed the discussion. And for me, this report sort of is a good example that shows when we scream animal health, people actually are listening and are interested, and that animal health has very good arguments to get more attention. So actually, thanks a lot to the authors of this report to provide a tool that hopefully will not only be used in Sweden, but also on a more international platforms to sort of show the importance of animal health for livestock development.
Thank you. Yes.
Maybe I say something before you say something.
Okay.
Yeah. I think from IBA, we pushed you quite a lot and we worked hard together, and it, you had to put more time into it, the report, than you had intended to or planned to do. But I must say that we are very, very thankful for the result, and I hope now that you also can be quite happy, because you have had a lot of positive feedback on this, and we'll see what happens next. So thank you very much first. And you can.
Well, my final words would be, again, to actually exaggerate the problem with that the majority of the countries in Africa, for instance, has no vet school, for instance, no training, no research capacity of their own in the country, and thus not much of recipient capacity for any efforts that are would be done in this context. So, again, building up capacity in the countries themselves to perform training, teaching of veterinary professionals and animal health officers, and also own research capacity. That's an area where Sweden could continue to contribute quite a lot.
I want to thank Ulf for inviting me to do this piece of work. It's been a good thing for me, as well as I hope everybody else here, and also for EBA for providing the support over the last 12 months. I want to reflect a little bit on something I talk about quite a lot in different environments, but I've estimated that for every person on the planet, we have about 180 kilos of domesticated animals behind us, which is about twice my size. And they're currently, our biomass and our domesticated species, our chosen species on the planet, dominate everything we do on Earth at the moment. And if we ignore their health, then we will ignore our own health. So I think actually making sure that we get the balance right in terms of what monies we're providing, what people we're training in this area is absolutely critical at the moment.
Ulf? Thank you, Gunn-Britt, for the kind and sweet words. And I think the three of us have really, even though it has been a long and winding road, we have really enjoyed this. And this seminar has been very good. So thank you. And I also want to thank the photographer there behind our all, Janne, that has really supported us in this and guided us in this work in a very nice way. The final wish or word from my side is that that the Swedish foreign policy related to aid is and its proxy SIDA is not leaving the 750 million poor livestock keepers behind, and we now move into the Agenda 2030. I see a big risk for that, because they don't have the strong ones. They don't have Twitter accounts. Think about that.
Thank you. Isn't that the whole purpose of our work on Agenda 2030? How to proceed further and how to do it better? I want to thank you all for being here and for participating in the discussion. And it seems that you have studied the report and understood it well. I would also like to refer to another paper at the table there, and another piece of work by IBA. And it's the development dissertation briefs. We provide a platform for young researchers to make a brief out of their dissertation thesis on topics that are of relevance for development. And here is one. development aid as the Swedish University of Agriculture and Science and its predecessors, exporting agrarian expertise. So it gives a lot of information about what we have been talking about here. The report is available on the table. And now, thank you very much.